There is a difference in effective communication. So, if you can just say that, say that the people who are leading, I'm pretty sure we are going to take up this task that has been given to us into high standards. And I think we welcome the department for bringing this information to us, because I hope it's going to assist us very, very well. This is well appreciated and welcome, because otherwise this information we could not use. So I think this information came at the right time, because we are preparing for the debate now, by the way. So we're going to assist most of the members. And we understand that sometimes it cannot matter it, because because of time constraints, it may not matter the whole information, but at least we do have a background where we can move on forward. So, I don't have much to do today, but to welcome you, and we ensure you that we are going to work closely with you. So, don't disappoint us, Mr. Zabana, and your team. And with those words, I wish to welcome you. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure to this, but my head.
I think in terms of our program for today, I've done the introductory remarks, but there was also many background on the purpose of the program. But I think the opening is already done, because the meeting has been set open already, and I've done the opening remarks. So I think we have the introductory remarks by the DC, and we're going to have a background to the Council Housing Policy, Housing Act, and then we are going to embark on discussion, and then we have tea break at 10. We're going to take only 10 minutes. And then after tea, we'll have shift in housing delivery program for the 1994 white paper on housing for the 2024, the comprehensive plan. And then we discuss, and then at 10:50, we'll have a meeting. We'll go ahead and have a meeting on housing sector plans and housing chapter of integrated development plan. And then we carry on about the discussion, and then we go to projects across the country and critical challenges faced by the location. The last one is the total rural housing and PhD. And that will bring us to the end of our presentation for today. I wish to let you get your apologies if there are any apologies. And I think the first one is from the GG. He has requested that before the meet, there was something that caught the same meeting. So he's going to accept that one, but it's coming. So I don't know if you just have a thought. The apologies.
Morning, the apologies that I had before the DM. He's attending a cabinet meeting today, and also Ms. Loretta Jacobas will speak.
Thank you very much. I think this is important for us to know that who is here, though it's not accommodated in the program, but it's very much important. And the members should know the department along the department, the department of law and the members. Because if we are sitting here, we don't know who. So I would like you, honorable members, to start by introducing themselves one by one.
Honorable members.
Good morning, everybody. Who's standing from the EA?
My name is
Mashishi
Edmund from
ANC.
My name
is Kevin Together ANC. My name is from the ANC.
Thank you, Gloria Coleman from the ANC. Firstly, let me start by congratulating
honorable members for being chosen as the members to oversee this important function of human development. If I'm allowed, I would have asked them to be careful. In particular, I share your thanks for being appointed as the chair of this committee. And let me say on behalf of the minister and the deputy minister, as well as the director general of the human development department, I would like to unequivocally commit the department to as you outline chair, respect and respond appropriately. And that means timely and with the necessary content and honesty with the matters raised by the committee. We hope that you will have a very fruitful 5 years. As we learn and become wiser, we have not achieved wisdom yet. We would like to indicate and humbly indicate so that we know that we are not the wise people on matters of human development. So we believe that the leadership that the committee looks at and provides to us certainly will assist us in ensuring that we live to the expectation of Parliament as well as the nation, which the committee, which Parliament will represent. I think in the interest of time, I will not go through any of the items that we have discussed. The discussion. But I was wanting to say that what we have done is put a program that we see, recognizing that there would be new members to the committee, and certainly they are not new to society, and therefore the human development issues may not necessarily be new, and in fact, the newness could actually be a benefit to those who have been there, or who would some of us be unable to see things differently from what they have been experiencing. I think it's absolutely essential that we recognize that that new blood would give us the could work with the advantage of the program in general. We met here after the president indicated that we no longer shall be called housing, we shall be called human development. But that's because of a very important purpose and reason. Secondly, housing, being one of the constitutional issues, will play an important role in the activities of this department. With that, I'm understanding it made recently. And certainly, since 2004, the previous minister, having run a process of developing the new approach that we indicated by the plan, comprehensive plan for the river road, for the development of the sustainable human settlement, certainly, some work would have been done. And I think this can is an opportunity for all of us to live the objectives that are in the NG. Which we call the plan without the plan to be. In that regard, Shem, we accept that some things will be new. Certainly, the plan started the process, and I think this can should be about putting together the national plan to ensure that those objectives are achieved. I think I will acknowledge what I said, but I think certainty is not in that regard. But let me say one thing about this department. We are looking for one with fruitful engagement with the committee,
We also recognize that there are women's sessions in the college that deal with specific issues that we can have the program, and some days we'll be discussing the strategic plan and the budget, and then we plan to, you know, different discussion groups on the board, and most of which would have come out of the program that we run under the Department of Housing. The second day we now put together for what will be the department. A lot of the interdepartmental functions and engagement are taking place in government as we speak to ensure that we are able to do some of those. I think at an appropriate time we'll be able to bring the committee on programs with regards to those areas. Certainly it means more than just what we wear and how we the committee when the time comes for that actually to take place. And with those words, Chair, once again I would like to thank you for giving me this opportunity on behalf of the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Director. Let's proceed to our third item.
Thank you very much. Thank you for speaking up to Chief Financial Officer on this question. Without that, I mean, we can't do anything with the department. I've got the items on the agenda, I have thought that Diana asked the members of not on their first term but on their second term in the committee to deal with that, so that I'd like to take the new members just through a little bit of history and a common understanding of what we're dealing with in the area of new settlement. I think it's important that we just think what are human settlements and the range that we have in South Africa, because that helps us to understand, I think, the complexity with which we are dealing in trying to develop policies which would then fulfill our constitutional rights and adequate housing. So therefore, in my outline, I'm going to just do a common understanding of human settlements to take us through a sort of a classification. Then briefly deal with the white paper which initially, of course, being 1994, but it still stands at the center of our policy. And then just deal with the Housing Act of 1996. That takes it up to two. That's a bit of history. Following these, we will be looking forward at the comprehensive plan of 2004. And how that's played out and what's been implemented and where we stand in terms of that. So, therefore, towards common understanding of the institutions of policies, just a couple of remarks. The settlements are complex social and economic phenomena, which exist along a urban rural continuum. There's a lot of focus on rural, there's a lot of focus on urban, and there's no clear definition. And if you look at international literature, they generally continue to see range of settlements along that continuum. And I've tried very much to give you, if you're having trouble seeing from the screen, it's in fact, but to see that urban rural continuum exists from the metropolitan areas through to subsistence farming areas. And most of these settlements vary in size and intensity of development. They are bound, however, by flows of migration from rural areas to metropolitan areas and back from metropolitan areas to rural areas, especially migration. Many of the rural areas are dependent on remittances and grants and a little bit of subsistence farming. So a lot of money and goods flows from the metros and the cities to the rural areas and vice versa. So there you get a sense of the continuum. I'm going to show you some examples of those in the next part of the presentation. For the housing purposes, we usually differentiate between 10-year sites because at the center of the housing policy is the security of tenure. When we provide people with a subsidy, we must make sure that they have secure tenure so that they can actually have an asset which they can on-sell or develop and plan the housing better. So we differentiate in terms of tenure, and you will see in the formal towns, macro towns, the small towns, we have freehold and rental tenure. And then in the rural areas, we usually have communal land-based tenure. And then in the farming areas, it depends on local arrangements mostly. That slide captures the whole of the continuum. Let's look at settlements of freehold and rental tenure. These are the formal settlements, the towns. If you start at the top of the range of the metropolitan area, they have a region-wide urban footprint. In other words, a city like Johannesburg has a footprint stretching way beyond the borders of South Africa. It is one of the financial capitals of Africa and the region. It has an established core of industrial, commercial, and suburban development, a formal township, hospitals, and backyards, that is informal settlements. It usually has high rates of migration, often circular migration, people who migrate on a seasonal basis. And then there's the highest concentrations of urban poor. Examples of those are Gauteng, Durban, Cape Town. Just to get a sense of the Gauteng metropolitan region, encompassing cities like Pretoria, Johannesburg, Johannesburg, from the Vale, Suffolk, and you'll get a sense of the intensity of these developments. What to generate huge amount of the GDP of this country. That's the Durban Metro, and just an acknowledgement to you on this one as well. It gives you a sense of how large it is and what it encompasses. In the Durban Metro, it has a formal area and it is also surrounded by communal tenure areas. The next lower range, if we want to look at it that way, is primary cities. These are typically colonial administrative centers, a province-wide urban system. They often traversal out to mining industrial areas. They have limited suburban stock, formalized out that extended to subsidized housing and informal settlement. Typical examples could be Kimberley, Bloemfontein, East London. Really have a picture of Kimberley, which is a sense of the size of that settlement. There's Bloemfontein on loan. And even classified those as primary cities. The next range in the hierarchy is secondary cities. These are established formal core of mining commercial suburban development, and they often lead to all former homeland settlements in the vicinity. What we're experiencing at the moment, some of the most rapid migration and extreme levels of poverty, people typically migrate from rural areas to secondary cities before making the jump to a primary city or metro, so there's a lot of pressure on these areas. Examples are Nell Strait, British White River, Luxembourg, Polokwane, and Whitbank, Middleburg, Complex. Just to give you a sense of such a city, there you can see White River, Nell Strait, and the Kamyamazan area, all integrated into a human settlement of what you can call a secondary city, with commercial and formal and informal areas. Another one would be Polokwane, with its attendant cities adjoining the Seattle and so on. Then we have the small towns, and these that are particularly problematic because many of these small towns have lost a lot of their funding. They used to be small service centers for agriculture, owing to better transportation, the numbers of commercial farms dwindling or being halved. People have moved out of these towns, the young people are not staying there anymore, and they've lost a lot of services. So many of them have really become poverty traps. They've lost a lot of their They don't have pharmacies, they don't have doctors, the ministers of service, and they're really struggling. Some of them have actually called themselves, and they've turned into tourism centers and so on, and they've become quite attractive places for people to live who are seeing the metropolitan area. Some examples, there's some of the prayer in Eastern Cape, and if you look at the bottom of the picture, you can actually see that housing development stuck onto it, so to speak, the RDP houses at the bottom. And many of these small towns show the duality of the RDP house, and then the small town, the old formal small town, has a lot of open camp and it's fairly underdeveloped, but it's a service of infrastructure. So these are the decisions which have been taken with regard to the planner, I think it's extremely bad planning. But you will find this pattern repeated in many of these small towns. Here's a small town of Rotterdam in Tumalanga. You'll see that exactly the same pattern. Large town, unmistakably underdeveloped, and then stuck on the side is the so-called RDP towns of the map, pattern of the. See, that sort of deals with the formal towns. All of those can get healed in and then put in, and there's no problem. They establish houses, you develop them within the existing framework of legislation. If we look at some new tenure areas, these are typically rural areas. People in those areas often enjoy secure tenure, formalized as such, but they have a functional security of tenure. In some of these areas, there's a conflict in landmarks contested. And there's a huge variety of densities in these areas. I'll show you a couple of examples of those. These are areas are often where the first of the poor live and the most disadvantaged. The elderly, women, and children predominate in these settlements. Young people have less to a large extent for the city. The male population is often absent. And you will find that, for instance, in the northern part of Limpopo, something like 95% of the households are women here. So this just gives you a sense of the challenges we have related to you. Often also, lack of social and economic development opportunities. Many studies from back to a while ago show that many of the young people in these areas have actually given up even looking forward. These are universities. The economies are often persistent farming, but heavily dependent on grants and remittances from the urban area. So this communication around that maybe that I'm talking about in settlement. People working in the city and getting that money to Spain, and then of course the social grants which people are heavily dependent on. Some have urban gardens, you can see a poor utilization of land. They're often also subject to secular migration. People moving, for instance, from the Eastern Cape to Cape Town Metro. Still, they're conducted by the urban problems and safety unit of the university here, show that some of our 35% of people living in tax settlements didn't want to access their subsidy in the Eastern Cape because they have their homes in the Eastern Cape and want to go back there one day when they're tired. That's where they feel like their families are safe and happy. And they actually didn't want to have subsidy and access subsidy. Okay. That obviously, that I mentioned, is very problematic in the sense of trying to help people find the fairly informal settlement. And that brings the issue of rental housing, where people can actually rent housing and then go back and access very strongly to the fall. Examples of this is the Inconomic Trust areas in KZN. Many of the former homeland areas of Mpumalanga are focused on that's predominated in those areas. That gives you an idea of what it looks like. This is the value of 1,000 deals in communal tenure and KZN. Very dense settlements, but informally arranged. This is a settlement in the Eastern Cape, which almost has a town-like layout. And you will actually see that there's a school and some kind of community facility already. Provided, but this is all on communal land ownership where people have permissions to occupy that land. On that very edge there, you can see some subsistence farming activities as well. This is typically the communal land. In your homestead, which we support, you will find that a homestead in this nature would obviously often have a couple of buildings associated with it. And here you can see there's a mix of additional buildings, the old bungalow, and then some more formal buildings also within the same settlement. This is quite a change, but often in these settlements, the challenge is not so much housing and is the issue of access to water and proper sanitation, access to roads, etc. So our policies and these areas need to accommodate those needs because we're trying to fulfill the needs of people rather than just providing them with housing. There's also an interesting debate on whether the whole focus should be really on preserving the ambiance of these areas rather than trying to build or increase up houses throughout these rural settlements. And then, of course, that gets an issue of backlog and how you calculate the backlogs, because if you include all of these people in the rural settlements, well, I think it's about 500,000 households or something currently in the rural settlements, that, of course, adds the backlog. So there is a debate around that. Opportunities in these areas are, of course, supporting up the additional technologies and strengthening those to provide houses which are actually sustainable. That's also for the traditional areas as well. So there's a range of interventions in those areas. Then you have these displaced dense settlements which are the apartheid legacy, they're characterized by the absence of formal industrial commercial activities, a heavy dependence on urban remittances, and examples of those are good foundations with the settlement density there, so almost a primary city on its own. Built on new land without any variable means of substance for people who reside there. Clearly, another area where we focused on was where the Constitution talks about the whole of South Africa, and we've looked at farming settlements as well. And there you can distinguish between intensive commercial farming areas, high yield farming, like you find on the Western Cape. Particularly the food farming area, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga. This is an example from the Eastern Cape, and for the visitors, you'll see very intensive farming, and you'll see the little town of Addo at the bottom of the cape, and then you'll see quite a large settlement also on the right hand of the cape, and most of these workers in these areas, the philosophy is that you can house them in the nearest settlement and not on the normal factors, because the transportation for genetic distances are quite easy to do. Also, the advantages of searching one center is much more cost effective, and people have access and their families have access to community schools, community facilities, and clinics if they live in a small town. So, in these areas, it's preferable to have them housed in a concentrated village type of arrangement, preferably strengthening existing centers where there is a municipality to provide these services. Very difficult to serve far outlying communities with proper sanitation removal of vegetation. We need to move to the next classification, which is for large commercial farms, typically in the free state areas. Lots of these farms have consolidated over the past couple of decades. There's increasing mechanization in these areas. Number of farmers has diminished, and a lot of the farm workers have been driven off the land and into the small towns, which are restricted and which are really cross-border steps. Because you must remember that once you access the housing stuff, it's the only way you get, and you're stuck in office room or wherever we have very little opportunity. Many of these households are, however, still associated with some family members living and working on the farms in those areas. They fulfill some seasonal cropping work from time to time, particularly the women. Here I have an example of the land use in such areas. You will see pretty extensive farms with one or two farm sheds scattered throughout, particularly of the little borough of the East Coast. These are also very high yield farms, but in these areas we have a program which looks at allowing the workers to live on these farms because of the community differences in their establishment. We then have these very extensive commercial farming areas where we have cattle and grain farming, but if you have a lot of goats, I'd like to share a picture of that. That's so, if you can enjoy these goats, it's wonderful. I wish they look. And they have very extensive, they have very low labor needs, and in those circumstances, it's also possible for our programs to actually help in subsidy, typically on a rental basis in those areas. See, and then lastly, there's a lot of people in the, specifically in the rural elements, which are very far from market, most driven by women. Crops are produced mostly for own consumption, and then incomes are augmented by the businesses, and that's typically what we find in the rural areas, a couple of them dollars, and some very meager subsistence farming. So, some implications of this data I've tried to give you is a real constitutional obligation to progressively realize the right to get out in the available needs to go back to the constitution. And the National Housing Program therefore needs to respond to all of these housing needs and settlement types. And it's continuously evolving. Policy is never static, and the members of our second term will know that we are introducing new policies. Reviewing policy which has not worked, etc. So it's a continuously economic evolving process. See, that's just a basic overview of settlement that we really just get to grips with what we're trying to do with. What I'd like to do in the next session, unless you'd like to have some discussions now, is just to give a quick touch back in the time machine to 1994 and the housing white paper and then the Act. I don't know whether you would like to have a discussion or questions at this point in time. I can deal with it, but you just remember that I don't take off.
Thank you very much. I would like to call it you, Mr. Dean.
Please call me Dean, like diet.
Yes.
You don't even know that Dean.
Yes.
Diet.
Okay. One of the members, I think we can proceed to the next one. Because that's the background of the human settlement, current data. So I think we have to get better.
Thanks, Anastasia. Just a brief background. We were very fortunate in housing. We had a national housing forum, which was a multi-party and stakeholder forum negotiations that happened in 1993 prior to our democratic election. So we were ready to go. Shortly after the first democratic elections in 1994, we produced a housing white paper, and that policy has shaped the prevailing context at that time. And it's very interesting, if we go back, and I'm going to just take you back to what the considerations were when we started the white paper in 1994. We had a population of about 43 million, we had 43% unemployment, 55% of households spent below 1,000 rand a month. And only 17% of our costs could have themselves without assistance. We had a backlog of 1.5 million, 200,000 new households were being created annually through natural growth. We had 5 million existing dwellings at that point in time, and 25% had no access to water, no filtration, no access to electricity. It sounds familiar. If we really look at where we are today, we may be surprised, and I think I've said alluded to that, but we still have many of these same challenges that we have. So I think the chair has indicated that we want to renew our efforts, and it's just interesting to see where we were then and where we are now. See, the white paper has 7 strategic tracks. The first one was the stabilizing of our housing environment. At that point in time, the bank had lent quite a large number of, given quite a number of large loans, and that some of these loans were failing. They had something like 33,000 properties in possession. So we established a company called Servcon and Belisha to assist with the bank jointly to right size people and to where we were talking on their loans. And we have established that that time among the identity frameworks which guarantee none of the areas which they have previously headlined. The second one, supporting the housing process, that's the new people housing process program which was launched. That's been problematic in some areas because it's been a very slow deliverer. It doesn't deliver the scale, and our colleagues will be talking about it later today as well. We've enhanced that program. Mobilizing housing credit, we've got these agreements with the banks. And that they would name, and most recently you'll have to know that they made a commitment to be the financial service arrangement and agreement. The major one which we all know about is providing housing subsidy assistance, and there are a number of housing subsidy programs. They are encapsulated in the National Housing Code, quite a complex document with a range of subsidies which tend to cover all of those areas in the municipalities which I've been sharing with you. Then, we're optimizing our institutional framework. In 1994, there was something like 7 different housing programs and authorities, all dealing with various population groups. And through the Housing Act, we did away with all of those, bringing everybody under the same umbrella, the same rights, and the same system. Facilitating a speedy release of service land, and you will be aware that this is one in a bonus contention and is a huge problem in some of the municipalities areas. You can find well located adequately right land, and we dealt with that most recently through the establishment of the housing development agency. And then coordinating public sector investment is still an ongoing problem to ensure that there are new settlements rather than housing settlements, new settlements encompassing the provision of police stations, medical facilities, recreation areas, education, and commercial activities in one settlement at the same time, which has been quite a problematic area. See, the key impacts, some of them, I think the housing subsidy scheme has introduced, has made a huge difference to the lives of many people. I think 9 million people have actually benefited, now enjoy secure tenure, sanitation, access to water, and most of them also to electricity. Rationalizing our roles and responsibilities in education has been a major achievement because we have clarity on the role of national, provincial, and local government. We mobilized housing finance, the establishing of the National Housing Finance Corporation, mortgage indemnity funds, and the right-sizing operation was served on the police has been successfully concluded, and the economic scheme has been wound down. And then I think the people government process has also empowered a lot of communities to participate in their own housing and then realize better products. Just thinking that what does the Housing Act do is a very tedious and long act, and you'll see much of the stuff in there now done at the end of the act because it was all dealing with phasing out of the old legislation. But the Housing Act is defined by housing process. I would like to touch on this issue briefly. Housing is not a product. Housing is a process through which people are empowered, communities participate, and it's the end product of that is empowered communities who have new skills and new abilities, and they are then empowered and they have a housing product achieved. So we really need to move towards that, especially in the upgrading of informal settlements. We need to get our community to participate in that. We specifically fund that participation in that program, and we will assist them to empower and also to plan and take part in the economic activity that goes with the housing process. At the end, we are going to end up with a housing package, which will encourage them then and enable them, depending on their own economic circumstances, to move up the housing ladder. We all, I think, start at one stage when we're young in our lives, we start a house or start a cycle arrangement, and then we move up as we go into the economic chain. it's also interesting that the church demonstrates principles. If you go back to the principles and act towards our human testimony, integrating development, media density, you will find all those words there. It just didn't happen since 1996. For a variety of reasons. I don't want to go into all of those, that's what we've done. It didn't look at the life of the National Housing Code, which is the overarching guiding framework, policy framework. The National Housing Information System, many will talk about, and then National and Provincial Housing Development Plans, which are article of the shared. It also establishes the South African Housing Fund and the Provincial Housing Fund. Our CFO is himself of that program. That's the, what we fund the subsidies for. Exactly like previous housing legislation, which is most biggest part of the act towards the end of the deal with those issues. It provides determination of the old business and has gone through a number of amendments. I'd just like to share with you the theme of the most important one. Initially, there were provincial housing boards which took decisions around projects. That has gradually been abolished, and the right to take decisions and approve projects after that gone through the procurement process has now led to the NEC stage. So it's a difficult responsibility, so there was a shift from that as well. It also introduced a fee into the right, which is very good against the cycle of 8 years, which in which people may not sell their houses without offering them back to government, but this was to try and prevent the sale of houses below the value that government had actually invested in them. This remains a problem because many of these sales are informal and they will keep on taking place. And the reason why that happens is that often people, owing to economic circumstances, need mobility, they need to move on, and our houses are not linked. Formally in the market, so that is a huge problem for us. But that being the right for the main legal proposal dropped into relation to the use of the period of pilot. That will probably cause it debatable. Then it also introduced very specifically a procurement policy, which deals with the open, fair procurement of goods and services for housing in line with the rest of our but it's a long story that I thought was really important that we understand where we come from. And the next session I'll see we can deal with the issues of the new sensation and context.
Thank you very much. I think now we can start engaging with the local because I think the session is very much important that we will need to look at some issues. So I would like to resume that and we can also have our
thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department. I think it's really great. Members of the deputy and previously have been to come on the call. So there are a number of very short questions, Chairperson. And I'm going to get to the first sort of presentation. The small towns, which have been referred to as property traps. Now, usually those are the areas where there are, and abundance is maybe the wrong word, but there are generally a lot more suitable land available for houses than there are in the urban areas. Now, with the HDA and the emphasis on internet development, does the department have any plans to effect, rejuvenate that social and economic activity within those particular towns so that we can start providing housing there as well, but simultaneously get some of the people that came to migrate into the urban areas in search of jobs, etc., back into those small towns. And by doing that, they also get an outward migration from the urban areas, which will obviously bring some reduced in terms of services in our urban areas. Then, in some instances, and particularly I think that was to the other ranges or categories that have been identified, whether it's the subsistence farming or something like that, mentioned we make of rental housing we made available to those workers. Would those people then qualify for the normal subsidy in the city or town where they actually live? So both the subsidy there for an RTPL as well as the rental subsidy that they both should use the farm. And then the last feature, and it refers to this last presentation, and I do agree with the presenter, housing is not a product of the process. But an emphasis is one to be correctly put on the voter participation and the empowerment of the beneficiary. Now, PhD has been one such process, which as far as I know has failed personally. It may have worked in one or two provinces to some degree, but generally the PhD person has been a failure. What are we thinking of introducing to actually fill that gap?
Thank you very much. Another long comment.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could just a couple of things, and that is also a very good question that I would ask. To ask when we are going to communities, and I think on one of those slides which you had there where you said that in this community it's more infrastructure, roads and things like that that we need to be looking at in those settlements. What is the level of community participation that happens there? You know, how do we go into communities and establish what it is that we want? Because one of the things that I've come to realize is that often the community sees things very differently to what we see them as. And if you take the community along with you, you stand a much better chance of making progress and having development. The second thing I want to pick up on is the slide that you had there about the advancing your settlement in one area because it's a small town, and it's better to have them in one area to provide all the infrastructure. Now, I don't know how big a town we're talking about here, but you know, people in the settlements, the whole problem has been that's right, that's the slum, to get them to their work opportunities. Now, you know, what then are we doing by way of the transport assistance to these people to get them from there? What is the process that we follow in that regard?
Thank you. Thank you. One quick thing that we would ask, we're assuming will come up better place for the next going forward. But I'm obviously coming back forward for these things and haven't been put in the committee previously. But the idea obviously that people need to be protected from being relieved of their one time assistance because of a sudden problem that they occur, so they're having an issue there. That we understand so that those kind of protections need to be in place. But where somebody genuinely, because of work, has to move from one area to another, is it not possible in the handing back of that, and this is probably something that you've already looked at, and just want to understand it, in the handing back of that property to government, on government books, that subsidy then becomes available for wherever they need to go. So I just wanted to know what you discussed from that aspect.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Chair and Department. My question is with regard to whether the only issue in the presentation is about the footprint of the people as well. But my question is, what does the change in name better than the type of approach? Because we're in the Department of Housing, which confines us to the forward, now we are human settlement. In terms of the approach, what does it entail? There are no legislative mandates and however the approach now. in chemistry, now human medicine, what are the four bodies of the college?
You have written one of the main adjectives, which is the department of the form, and then we'll take another.
Thank you. So the first question is around small towns and poverty cuts. After the department do not have control over region to eliminate a small town, a difficult town, there is no plan that I'm aware of in government. Typically, if we really go back to the 1890s and now really thinking that the German geographer called the Stalin and Media Space Analysis of Germany, and these small towns in the middle of them in South Africa, very similar to the Free State and the following country, they were only about 50 kilometers apart, 50, 70 kilometers apart. And then one would have a way to take the Free State over. Google, you know, Kunta has some high water functions, hospitals, doctors, etc. And it's strong. Google has very low water functions, probably at the ground dealer and co op. And as the farming community, many farmers are used to just few farmers and the relatively few in small towns lost their purpose in life, so they don't really have a purpose. And that really accounts for the fact that there's no point for a doctor to be in a small town if they only have two or three patients a week. This is the issue there. You will see there are thousands of cars in each. You know, it's really depressing when we dive to the. Some of these small towns, we have good local units. Other ones just go to the school hospital. There are kids, so, you know, the parents are there to see the hospital. There's no kids, so the last one is exclusive. In some of these areas, we have good local leadership that has been converted, and I can think of places like Canada, which has become quite a tourist mecca. People move there, artists go there. There's quite a number of these small towns working for both forces. Another one which is coming in there, right? All painters, there's lots of little shops and so on. People have actually moved and go live there, they're trying to put a problem out of it. But that local leadership and that some other purpose in life, which is usually tourism or nice climate or to be close in proximity to each other. But there is no strategy that can turn those unaware that can really turn that around, because these places become very unattractive places to those boxes. Then for housing on the farm, yes, the issue is that the farm worker policy provides for a rental housing so people can provide proper adequate housing on the farm, people then while they're working there, and then when they leave they can actually access the food subsidy where they're trying to get some work. Then there is also the issue of participation in the PHP failures. Many of the failures in the PHP was that when the 2.79 requirement, the own contribution was reduced, many projects being projects, I'm getting the technical there, were converted to PHP to escape the payment of the 2.79 own contribution. And that led to a lot of difficulties and blockages. It was full PHP, but it wasn't being PHP. And the contracted bulk because it was all done by private policy, and I think that there is a lot of problems. I'll finish explaining it to the rest of the audience. Then just on community participation in the local settlement, policy provides, and he's talking deep rural areas here, on communal land, policy actually provides for land affairs, legislation and regulation to where the community is involved in verifying that the business benefits from this subsidy. They've been living there for at least 5 years as a resident of uncontested, and that the community then plans around what they actually need. Is it an access to water, etc.? And that comes from it. So that there's a whole process which involves the community in that process, right? So in the plan. Because I might not be there, and I might be there, because the policy actually provides specifically for that. Transport assistance to people, my understanding is most of these areas, the employees of the farmers actually provide the transport to from the, for their workers. The one time assistance, the handing back, yes, if you, in theory, and it doesn't happen in practice, but in theory you can hand your property back and then access another subsidy elsewhere. Changing names, it's very nice for us because we've been, if you look at the comprehensive plan, it's called a comprehensive plan for human settlement, sustainable human settlement. And the main plan for us presents us with an opportunity, I think, to bring together the functions that go together to make up a sustainable human settlement. That's, in other words, there are some sort of coordination function or to bring those units together that need to make up the settlement. It's got to be that first without government. So it presents an opportunity for that question. That's the main chance. And that is under discussion to put the RPG into place if you could possibly give me some more. So that's sort of the thing. Sorry, she's not going to be better.
We have seen many businesses for long time. What are the effects of the augmented for this response? I would like to contribute just to the development of the small town. The development usually takes from, our next start by saying that interrelationship and interdependence of the primary and the secondary town. And this is where the province comes in handy in its money. We have what we call provincial development strategy. The provincial development strategy puts together, consolidates all the individual towns and cities within the economy, within the economy. We see the problem. One example will be taken here at Johannesburg. That Johannesburg recently has said it has not been growing. Johannesburg has not been growing, but it has been serving as a reception center. People arrive in Johannesburg and they move over.
through the community structure, all the rich investments are both ideas. and how are we going to be located in the issue of community. The process itself will be adequate as well because we actually have a location context. So that, and we also have special projects which are not emerging driven from housing. We call it urban renewal project. We are known to most of the government officials. We just do the urban development project. We invite smaller towns and inner cities. And those are special interventions that are already happening in many areas. And I would also want to say the way to prove is that for the PHP. The PHP is understood to deliver houses at scale, then it will be sustainable from day one. The PHP is one to appreciate it, we must look at it as a training intervention. So that how many people went through the PHP, what is the level of their skill that they have acquired through the process of PHP. So what has happened in the last 10 years or so was that the PHP project will run together with the normal project. And we will deliver 1,000 units. The PHP, because of its training component, and people will be obviously doing slowly, and they will not be able to deliver at scale. So it has its own problems. We have tried to improve on the PHP, and we are now seeing instead of individual people going on PHP, let PHP run by community, so that we have more hands on board. And what is good with PHP is that it is a simple new tool to work PHP, not to code. And if the community chooses to go to PHP, they are able to build a bigger house, they are able to get a bit of skills, and they are able to get gains. So there we start we don't see that coming and when it is effort and together we are working on some elements of the PhD. It is so
And lastly, just a remark. About the element of the human settlement, that maybe I will use that to the case.
I think that but I think we need to specifically reference to the question around the change of name and what does it mean. And we've had several engagements with the new minister, the deputy minister, and the minister on with regard to the social strategy. Certainly, it is allowable that it is going to change. I think one has to look at the totality of the configuration of government that we have to see and appreciate the life effect of the change. Certainly, for example, I agree with you, there is a lot of engagement in that department around the reconfiguration of the functions and reassignment, realignment, and coordination of some of those functions. You would expect, we would expect that, for example, the work functions that are transferred from other sector departments in order to improve and for that the coordination of the implementation. Some of that will include, for example, the look at the funding model, the funding streams, the various grants that we are having, and to ensure that those that contribute to the sustainable integrated human settlement are aligned appropriately. Now, we have to look at that in line with the development of the human settlement department that we have. Look at the planning commission, certainly a very significant partner to the human settlement program. And with regard to some of the issues that are around the in the small times that he doubted probably had. Most of which I would either have a moral, significant moral character. Sitting in the department now that he will be with a specific emphasis to rural development. Certainly that is a problem. At this particular moment, I cannot say there is a product defined because the process of ensuring that the process for the development of an appropriate strategy and mechanisms for that rural development happen. We certainly are in progress and we will engage in on those as the Department of Human Development. I think that the name will be more, in that regard. I think there is a lot of response to the question on the protection of people, and this case is another additional question which is not answered absolutely. I will ask members to just remind us about the information.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, can you come up with some questions?
Thank you very much for the presentation you have made. For the first time, some of us are already having an access to such valuable information as far as how to well human settlements prepare. And I'm really surprised here where this information has been lacking. Because clearly, our people down at grassroots level, if they had this information, they could have really probably approached their action otherwise. But mine is to just ask this question. If the department satisfies with the participation of informal services now within the housing development process, if so, what kind of representation in the structures for them to come up as sort of their voice? In terms of organized structure, the other kind of question. And number two, by 2014, we are informed that the government has set up, you know, informal settlement will be completely eradicated. Is that still the case? The last one would be the question of what influence does the department have when the eviction of the informal settlement takes place? And why is the government so quiet when some of the houses are actually cracking and falling apart in some of the places where houses are built?
Thank you very much, sir. I just want to know when it was published in the UN Department of Human Settlement. My worry is about the settlement of houses and the new government human settlement. How are we going to address the sizes of houses in the whole country? Thank you very much.
More questions. But before you respond, I want to check the
credibility of the entity. Because I think as a department you do have a responsibility to ensure that you, if I can remember, we had the representation that was in taking that to the last month that I believe, where we kept up all the people who are in need of housing. And if we can check talent on the ground, those entities, we cannot rely on the Department of Housing or Human Development. So I don't know, did you ever think of this that, because we have said we must have our youth, we must have youth, human development needs within the municipality that are appointed by the department, not paid by the municipality, because the next one thing to ensure that we really, really get the proper information. And then the second point is about the local housing, the local housing in this small town. As we have already mentioned that this rural town, not small town, this is the rural town, because there are employment activities that are happening there. That is why we find that there's a lot of people that are migrating from the rural areas to help these issues around the small town. Because those people, the local town, they want to make their own home, but try to do it for the human settlement. But I think that's the main thing that is simple example. Just to mount the view. There's a lot of work in this nation. And there's a lot of employment activity that is happening here. Even the official of the general department for the health department or each department, they reside in cocktails. Some of them, they reside in processing and money. And people that see it here, but it's being affected because they come late every day on duty and they leave area. So, our staff, looking at the statute, what are the plans for the department to make the assessment on the area that might be needed? And secondly, we have got in the rural areas, there are problems of our road infrastructure. So, the deliver of the material to those areas is a big challenge. I don't know, but I still have hope that because there is this partner, the rural development ministry, I hope that you are going to work closely so that we need to develop them, because the majority of those people living in the rural villages, that for the problem, they need government to build housing for them. And I think the other thing is the occupant of the application or whatever, the housing, government housing, but the government. I think we need to take a stop. Who has the real occupant? Because we will be surprised when you get government. So it is important for the government to ensure that we take stock. And the fact that I'm very sorry, we have not done any improvement. Let us be honest. I think in this case, we must make sure that something is done about the funders. Those people are living in tragic conditions. And in terms of the housing code, we have been requesting just to inform you on another number. We have been requesting this policy. I think almost for 2 years, we have never seen this policy. But we find that
starting with the policy is already implemented, but the one we are sending is the old one. And then the right one, I think it is proper for the members to get that, a copy of that policy so that we are all in touch. Then the members are going to be over time. They must also get that policy in their possession. For now, I think I can stop. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those questions. I'd like to start with some of them, and then I'd like our colleagues to also talk to that, because our colleagues are here from planning to comment as well as on the agenda. So if you try and answer or get some answer to some of the questions which pertain particularly to policy. The first one I think is participation in informal settlements, and how are people's voices heard in the upgrading. Informal settlement upgrading program actually provides funding, a funding item under that program per household for public participation and empowering people to participate in that process. So it's actually funded as part of it, because we believe that people should participate in planning and settlement and in contracting and upgrading, and looking at satisfying the real needs as opposed to what the community needs to be. In practice, this has been quite a difficult process, because public participation is driven through the local ward councillors as well as the representatives, and this in some cases has been problematic. And then what one also finds is that in some of these informal settlements there are illegal immigrants who have a vested interest in not participating in processes and actually disrupting them. Because they become very highly visible when they start upgrading these settlements and they don't plan for those settlements to participate. So it's not an easy thing to do. But that area which is problematic is that municipalities and provinces don't really have the capacity to engage meaningfully in these participation processes. And that's why we find that that in some cases or many cases not satisfactory. So it remains challenging. The next one is one of the questions that we're discussing. We are working as hard as we can with the resources available to us to use topics. There's just a word on language of an issue of communication, so I'm very much like this and not very much of it. So we're talk about the upgrading of informal settlements rather than eradication. That, of course, is dependent on capacity, dependent on resources available. I mean, I talk to the people from Treasury, I talk about the shrinking fiscal environment, so what we like to see is that achievable. At least, it's always good to have a target. In 1994, we had a target of a million houses in 5 years, and we actually reached that target just after the 5 year period. So if you don't have a target, there's nothing to work towards, and it's not a goal. So it's always good to have a goal. And we will have to see what those targets.
What does the upgrading common sense mean?
The word eradicate sort of has this picture of removing the big yellow machines, you bulldoze it and move the people out and put them into other places. The upgrading, if you look at our policy, if you see the upgrading, where is it possible, where the land conditions, where people are out of land that is suitable for housing, to try to work with them to improve, first of all, the 10-year arrangement, because people then have ownership, like owner. Secondly, to provide them with basic levels of service and to improve their service, water, sanitation. And then finally, to provide them with a top structure of the house. So it's an incremental process, it's tackled in phases, and as far as possible, where the land is suitable, to try and do on that land with the community, rather than moving off the land.
somewhat optimal practice. So we try and minimize the impact. And that's what the quality strategy does. So I'm certainly working with the people to end up with a full subsidized house with all the services that we want to do. So that's a really dedication to the art from the because using education and some people will interpret as just going in and going before the land and explaining. So the end product would be a footy scheme in the house.
You don't have to pay flat. What do you know?
It could be a new house. The end product would be a house. But footy scheme is a two bedrooms, bathroom, kitchen, and everybody else. And that sort of stuff. It's the process of doing it on the existing site. Because many of these sites are quite well located in the urban. Family, because people actually have jobs to try and have minimum disruption of people's jobs and access to work, etc. from the public. Where these areas are, of course, on the urban periphery, where the land is unsuitable, to look for better land, to relocate and be out, and of course, always the philosophy of working with people to be in that. Then the influence on elections in informal settlements. As you know, that all elections have to take place in terms of the existing legislation, the so-called FIRE Act, Prevention of Illegal Election, Protection of People on that right act, and it has to take place by order of court. And of course, we normally then require alternative. Housing to be provided. So it's a legal process. With regard to the poor quality of housing, there have been problems with very poor construction, management of those processes. We have a program in place to actually refurbish houses that are poorly constructed to rebuild and to fix them. So there is a program and that is the discretion of the NEC to apply to specific projects. So there is a program. But obviously one would also have measures to try and prevent poor housing being constructed, and there is now also people are looking at establishing an inspector service which would work with NSLRC and so on to improve the quality of the product. Has been a problem in the past. Once again, show capacity ensuring good quality relationship harder than it seems, because in doing that under 200 hours project, it's not always possible for every using small contractor, it's not possible for instructors to be on the ground all the time to see that the right quantities of cement and sand are mixed and to ensure that the mix is up to the time. In fact, it's a difficult issue and it's related to the fact that there is a program in place to make a specialty fix those houses that are not in good quality. Aside from the houses, for the square meters, the minimum ministerial normal standard, two bedrooms, bathroom, sound, kitchen, that's what we currently provide. In some areas, like the Southern Gate Conversation Road, there's additional amounts of plastering and flying steel to prevent flooding pressure inside the house, due to the growing of mold and protect people's health. But that's the current minimum ministerial normal standard. In places where one can achieve larger fires, and in many provinces where land costs are there, you can actually achieve larger. And then, of course, in the more wealthy municipalities, they are free to contribute additional amounts. And you will find that some municipalities have quite substantially larger, better product. But the rule is that they must do it across the board in that municipality. So that's where that will come into. Issues of IDPs and the demand database, I would like Mr. Orange to maybe deal with. You
round table. And then the issue of social housing, small town, road infrastructure, etc. I'm sure that the rural development department would deal with a lot of the rural issues that we touched on. I now know from experience that you are. We, of course, from having been a settlement spot, with continuity work, where you see that the policy instruments and the subsidies that we can provide from the housing in the settlement side connect with their development. We see how that falls into place in the future. Because really these settlements are the drive and are used and injection. But we have covered all of the areas. The farm growth policy we will make available to you was approved by Minmec formally in November last year, but we will have an approach to send you for each member that have a copy. Extremely problematic, but in the end we managed to reconcile with the local farming interests as well as the farming workers as well as unions, which is not working. But we managed to do that. I think that deals mostly, oh yes, the issue of the occupants, who's running the houses. There is going to be an occupancy survey which has been conducted by our monitoring and the relationships in the Philip Sharkey, maybe our DDG might want to say something about the occupancy survey. That is coming out of the way, that might be quite a substantial project, so no German. I don't know to what extent it's been changed to the more rural areas, but
any further questions?
That is underway.
Any further questions?
Yeah, it would be the quality of our business. So they're looking at the units and who's living in that at the moment, so that we can be an audit of that. Chair, I don't know.
contact and an articulation of the Matthias from this lockdown. It is like that, as I think it's commonly known that they see the Muslims coming to their own. And we really do trust that again with this new conceptualization of human settlement development and how we involve a number of other sector departments there, really would also cause a turnaround. And the chair around our housing human settlement specifically, our response to IDPs, if it's okay with you, I would rather that we hold that or the access until our 2 month presentation on housing chapter at the Mafia Housing Development. And then I'm also going to talk to the issue of important the role of planning and the specific implementation of those plans at the years of government. You had a specific question around housing officials that we use to pay them at that municipal level. Thank you.
I would like to ask you one question. Can you tell me about the things you have just that we are able to
do? Our research has been to show that the issue of demand is dead now.
Yeah, I was not going to say that in a long time. I think the whole of the issue is going to be the issue for us because some of the issues are going to come up during the crisis in so let's go to the next item, which is how we set up this.
Thank you. We now move a little bit forward. We've covered the reality of the past. I'd like to review the comprehensive plan and just give you a sense of how the policy is structured in the last term of government. From the housing white paper to what we call the comprehensive plan for the housing settlement. And then just to give you a sense of what we've implemented, because since 2004 there's been a lot of progress in implementation as well. I'd just like to quickly deal with a 10-year review of 2004. The government looked back and said, what do we achieve? The outcomes of our extensive consultation process then to deal with the goals of the comprehensive plan and the various interventions the progress on. I'm going to really skip through the all on paper there. In 1994 to 2004, we had delivered at 2004 1.6 million houses, 6 million people at the end of it, and we've invested something like 39.5 billion. And we have underground sophisticated delivery system and creating a range of needs. Unintended consequences of the previous program which were identified, peripheral development, part that platform was being extended and enhanced. We had poor quality products, and I think there are a couple of the gentlemen who referred to that issue. And the second is the lacking pressure on economic infrastructure. Remember, still in 1994 to 2004, we had a saving number. Many houses in 5 years, a lot of the land was available, was already serviced in government land, and they were often on the periphery, so the people were just building the houses and the targets, and then not getting any more settlement at that. Education, clinics, etc., was lagging behind the priorities in existing communities at that start. So that housing is really up and running. The rest of government at that point in time. Secondly, our housing market in the low-cost areas was also under the goal. We had some corruption about administration, because we were talking about politics. With a slowdown in delivery, initially most of the construction companies large construction groups were engaged in the sector, they were slowly withdrawing as the economy picked up, they were pursuing other priorities and some companies, part of the company, there's an increasing backlog coming to new house occupation and migration sectors. Urbanization picked up significantly as the apartheid era faded, and we are growing into more settlement. Most significantly with regard to backlog, I'd just like to highlight that there was a 30% increase in the number of households. Remember, we don't survive the housing subsidy, the regular survivors and households. And we have suddenly a 30% more than we had anticipated. So annual growth is normally about 200,000 households. Many of the households were built together prior to the plan, and someone in city two or three, and there was a lot of young people moving to the city. And so we had a 30% increase in households, which of course affected our so-called backlog. Higher than our rate of 2.7% per annum. Urban area is growing, and we have this increasing social and geographical disparities. More households are falling into the subsidy income. We had an uneven administration of policies. There was a dominance of the capital subsidy and delivered capacity constraints to the stocking to manifest themselves. 2004, government set itself five priorities for boosting our production, fast-acting delivery, capacity building to deliver at scale, mitigating social crime, specifically complex crime, and the diversification of our program, identification of the areas. Now, all of these underpin the development of the comprehensive plan. I'm just going to quickly go to the construction and just for saving some time. The goal is human settlements, which are economically, socially, and environmentally sustainable, and the plan was approved by Cabinet on December 2004. Just looking at what we mean by sustainable human settlements, there are three legs. There's an economic growth, environmental protection, and social progress. That's normally defined. And the reason that this survey is a debate that it should also be institutionally sustainable, which means the faculty and municipality and those deliveries and mechanisms should also be there to sustain the settlement. There are many definitions, but we use the one. Sustainable human settlements are well-governed settlements in which growth and social development are endemic, the scaling capacity of the natural systems on which they affect their existence in the world. Sustainable development, wealth creation, poverty alleviation, that's quite a mouthful. The issue of governance, I'd like to just highlight here. UN Habitat, which is the only one of two agencies, UN agencies based in Africa, one of the major programs is on the governance issues in human settlements. These are extremely important to make them sustainable. Well governed cities are sustainable. Such a series of the comprehensive plan, we have six, creating 20 million environments. And here, there's, I'll just quickly go through in six, just to give you a sense of where we are, it's a needs orientated approach. Previously, we government built houses or contractors built housing, and then we looked for people to put it. Now it's really focusing the other way around to see what people's actual needs are, working with them. Satisfy their housing needs. That's a shift, it's a major shift in the process. It's also building up a number of integrated society, and you will see that there are a number of programs that respond specifically to that. Unblocking delivery constraints, building the capacity of municipalities and provinces to deliver, and then looping up production and management processes. Just quickly to look at the first one, creating quality environment. Something is not put in here, but should be in here is to move from a 30 square meter house to a 40 square meter house, and minimum standards, two bedrooms, bathroom, kitchen lounge, as well as studies previously. The informal settlement upgrading program has become our main area of focus for the 2040 goals. So most of our efforts are addressed at these areas. And these informal settlements, as you know, are precious across the the seven little continuum, which come in large cities, small towns, taking us down to the lower end of the lower area. Secondly, and interestingly enough, is this program to provide social economic amenities in rural areas. Because the local government is lagging, we have a program which is trying to come out in front to provide amenity facilities, basically all that recreation, trading areas, areas where you can set up things, places, etc. And this comes from the housing fund in anticipation of the municipality and government on board and operating these facilities. So, because the other departments and these programs are not coming to the party, they actually start coming to make the human settlement move from us, the rental development to fully face the human settlement for the facilities. So, we were quite a way ahead of the 2010. We've looked very specifically at alternative housing technology, so the fact that there are one size fits all smart PE houses. The Ecology Innovation Hub was established, and then the range of alternative technologies. Just on this point, certain technologies are often faster, they sometimes more or often more expensive, not necessarily of sustainable good quality. So the answer is not always in new technologies. Often the old brick and mortar approach is quite a good one. In the rural areas, specifically, the authority doesn't have a program where you can use, indigenous technology, strengthen that. The CFR has worked on a program for that, so that people are empowered to actually provide more sustainable, proper houses through indigenous technologies in those areas. Environmentally efficient housing guidelines, we've got that on the table. Same to the head specifically with the spectrum power crisis, etc. Those are available, they guidelines, we're not prohibited. And then we have to introduce the regulation as much the amount to provide to people with disabilities, they get an extra to specifically prepare a house to suit their specific disability. And then the special development conditions that are in the present of the conversation. Okay, just quickly, we've got a social housing program, I'm not going to deal with that, they will help you. You know, once people's housing process, our colleagues will deal with that later. Forward the housing program, emphasis on community participation and planning, specifically that they actually need to be made. As far as to our perceived needs, and we have an emergency housing program which responds to emergencies and also can be used in the upgrading of the human settlements that we need to locate people on a temporary basis. Integrating an unlocked society, we moved from the main delivery in the old housing program of the critical project in housing custody, where identified piece of land, built houses, provided church community, but it was all RDP housing. The executive residential development program is now in place that provides for a variety of income groups and the housing types, together with stands for commercial activities, etc. to develop. In other words, a holistic, sustainable human settlement or community, rather than a residential cover for low-income subscribers. There are a number of these in the Gauteng area that I'm aware of that have been developed mostly in Cosmos City and in Bosch to provide that mix. So we've shifted, and this is really the integration component. And these suburbs will be integrating the lower-income groups into the urban fabric where they can actually access be more accessible to housing opportunities, to work opportunities than themselves. So that's quite a major shift towards human settlements rather than just doing housing. Housing land policy has been done and the housing development agencies now up and running. Housing chapters I'm not going to talk about. And then the identification of residential areas through the social housing program, which applies very specifically to urban and rural areas and in our case, zones in several areas to be redeveloped. to such projects. And blocking the delivery constraints, this is one of our major issues. The FLIS program was introduced. It's a finance lean program where we subsidize people up to a certain point who access mortgage mortgage together with a grant to then access what we call affordable housing. This program is currently under revision, and we're working with the Banking Association of South Africa in this regard to arrive at a suitable program of action for small and medium. This is so-called our media. Currently, people earning up to 3,500 grand per month per household receive a full subsidy. If you earn 3,500 and 1 grand, you actually cannot afford, even if you earn up to 7,000 grand, you actually cannot afford even a subsidized public school in the house. And those are the working households in the country. So this list covers that gap, and we revise.